party down, location mysterious. Wanna rock this con like my man James Tiberius.
Jesse and Marina, they're mad clever like the Negus. Gonna guide you through the scenes, beam from London to Las Vegas. Where to go, how to dress, when to sleep, who to see. Celebs not to miss, Curtis Wong and SMG. Star Trek into awesome, build some memories at last. Set the proper course, the Shorely Podcast.
Boom.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 49 of Shorely, your Star Trek convention community podcast. I am Marina Kravchuk, and with me is my co-host, the wonderful Jesse Akendo. How are you today, Jesse?
I am doing great, Marina. How are things going for you?
Pretty good. Thank you.
Are you enjoying Halloween? I'm keeping an eye out for the kids.
So am I. Thankfully, it has been pretty quiet so far. So I'm actually kind of excited that we're recording an actual episode on the Halloween night.
Oh, this will be all fun. Right. So now that we're here on Halloween, we're so excited. Just want to give you a couple of housekeeping things before we get started. You know that Shore Leave is part of the Tricorder Transmissions Network. And if you enjoy what we do here on Shore Leave or any of our Tricorder Transmission shows, please think about joining our patrons. Now, you can go directly to patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions or visit our webpage, which is www.thetricordertransmissions.com/shoreleave and click in on the Patreon link. Now, becoming a patron will give you instant access to our unedited and early release episodes, often with bonus material before and after the show. You'll also be invited to the monthly patron-only Trek Chat exclusively for our Patreon supporters. And with that, what are we talking about today, Marina? Let me take it over to you.
Almost a week of this recording, a week has passed since we came back from the UK. So we are going to be talking about our Destination Star Trek experience in Birmingham, which is very exciting. This is something that both of us were looking forward to for a while. And now it finally happened, and I'm looking forward to discussing this.
Oh, yeah.
So why don't we just start with sort of like an overall impression from the trip and the convention, and then we're just going to try and pick up on certain things that the experiences and people we've met and all that in more detail later on. Now, I know for you, this was a rather lengthy trip to UK, and then the last fanfare was the actual convention. So what's your overall impression from the trip?
Well, we definitely will have two different points of view. So I did spend about a week touring the UK. I spent some time in Liverpool with friends from Trek Friends. So it was like a Trek Friend international trip for me. And I totally loved it. Special thanks to Sheila and Tessa for hosting me and Sean Mooney for giving me a tour of Liverpool. Thanks, guys. So when I got to Destination Star Trek, I went with a core group of friends from Star Trek Las Vegas, Scott, James, Kimmy. You know, we were just all said, if Jesse's going to be here, let's do the Star Trek convention UK style. So, but I'll tell you, so before I say anything, Marina, you know that like I rank all my conventions based off my very first convention, which was Star Trek Las Vegas. So that may not be fair. But just to set it up, I was a bit tired from all the walking and all the stair climbing in the UK. So when I got there, I was both overjoyed and depressed at the same time. So when I walked in, I went, well, this is smaller than I expected. And I knew it would be smaller. Like I was told it'd be smaller. But like the first thing that kind of like threw me off was the little rooms. And I know you'll get into that a little later, but like, you know, they had the main stage in one corner and they had a couple of stages in each corner. And it was really weird because they were like makeshift walls. So it was strange. And then as soon as you walk in, you saw all the queues for autographs and photo ops. And I thought, well, it looks like half this place is autographs and photo ops, which I was told to expect as well. Now, that is the only logistical issue I had. In terms of the actual convention, I did have a great time meeting our Star Trek friends from Las Vegas and from other conventions. Was absolutely amazing, and meeting them on their home ground. I don't know about you, but I got a lot of, I can't believe you're here. We usually have to go there, guys, and that was absolutely fantastic. So the time I spent at the convention, again, Marina, for me, it's all about the people, and I mean, I just had a blast with the people there. It was great from that respect.
I have absolutely just echo that. I enjoyed the convention immensely. Possibly, maybe because of the way I approach conventions, especially the new convention experiences, I came probably super prepared, more so than maybe majority of people who attend any given convention for the first time. It's just the way I do things. But you're absolutely right. Meeting the fans, especially that I knew a lot of folks from that I know from Vegas would be attending. Plus, I knew that a lot of fellow fans, specifically to Star Trek, or specifically to Star Trek Voyager, or specifically to even Keith Mulgrew, the ones that I've known for years online, I knew a lot of them, especially Netherlands, Germany, they would be attending. And that was the first time that we actually met in person for the very first time. That part was probably the most exciting thing about this entire event. And I got exactly the same thing. I would be bumping into either one of Nicholas, for instance, and then they would be like, I can't believe it. We're having a Star Trek Las Vegas reunion right here in the middle of UK.
It was absolutely awesome to see. I mean, Maria, don't you think the international aspect of being a Trek fan really comes like blaring when I went to
Berlin? Absolutely tremendous. It was more international than I anticipated, which is kind of a silly thing because this is a European convention and you would expect people from, well, aside from UK itself, obviously, but you know, there will be certainly attendance from other European countries at least. But speaking to other fans in queues, you know, just bumping into folks, like I said, the ones that I know online, that was incredibly international feel to it that, I wouldn't want to say that it was different from Vegas because Vegas is international enough given how big, you know, it's the other large Star Trek convention in the world. But, you know, I've met several people from Brazil. There were folks from Japan, as I mentioned, Netherlands, Germany, Spain. So it was wonderful. It's sort of like in that regard, it was like, this is great. You know, I just experienced a version of this in Vegas. And now I have an opportunity to experience a somewhat different version of it in Europe, in UK. So we're going to discuss the first blush impression. Overall, I've been, perhaps because I did anticipate certain things based on prior convention experience. I mean, I have gone to other Comic-Cons and signing events previously that had similar type of setup. Again, because I was prepared. I found this convention to be very comfortable. Now, there were certainly things that kind of threw me perhaps a little bit, and we will talk about this later on. But overall, I found it like, this is great. You know, it's like not entirely family reunion feel as STLV, but kind of similar in the sense that, okay, I walked through the doors and I immediately figured out how this whole thing was set up, precisely because of the prior experience, actually. So it was comfortable. It was fun. I had a blast meeting you know, people that I already knew, people that I knew online, and it was great to meet them in person and meeting new folks. You know, just the same approach as always, just stand in the queues and talk to the people around you. It was wonderful.
Yeah, and I'll tell everyone, I'm going to tell on Marina. So Marina got there a day before I did. So she got to tour the space about, you know, when it was emptier. So when I got there, Marina knew exactly where everything was. It was like, do you know where Larry Nemechek is? She says, yeah, if you go two steps that way and one step this way, he's right there. I mean, it was absolutely like I had my own guide. And, you know, we had Scott Hardy on last time, and he's one of the folks we were with. And with his help and Marina, like, it took me like 2 minutes to figure out the convention and where everything was and where I wanted to spend.
Yeah. It's basically, you know, if we should probably just actually start to break it down a bit, and we can speak about the convention facility itself.
Yep, we do have an agenda, folks. We'll try.
Well, it's a lot to discuss, but basically we'll talk about things as they naturally pop up, hopefully. It's a pretty convenient space, I found. It's a very large convention center. The convention did not occupy the entire thing. It occupied one of its halls, convention hall number 5, which basically those of you who have been to a Comic-Con it's exactly that same setup, basically. You have a giant concrete / metal and glass box, very tall, very wide. And the interior is basically just broken down into functional, you know, areas by function. That's you know, it's typically how they do at Comic-Cons. So you have three main stages. The main stage is a sort of, it's a wonky thing compare if you try to compare it to Star Trek Las Vegas, because Vegas is actually using a convention facility with convention halls and separate theaters and conference rooms that are used. So they're actually separated physical spaces. Whereas in this case, you do have just a corner of the convention hall separated by this very tall blackout curtains, and that's your main theater.
Yeah,
and another corner just has chairs that's just basically an open space, and that's your Voyager stage, your secondary stage. So it's a little bit different in that regard, and it certainly has its own pros and cons. And to be perfectly honest, I did find more cons in that regard. But overall, you know, so you have everything in sort of in this one area, you know, your photo booths and your areas for specific events. So you have the science zone, the gaming zone, the screening room, the autographing area. It's not like you have to basically run around different corridors. You just walk in into this giant hall, and that's where everything is.
It was very convenient in terms of getting to everything. So when you go to Vegas, you know, you're walking like 15 minutes to get to the hall. And once you walk, the hall is so big and all the rooms that, I mean, you could walk miles and miles a day in Vegas and not see everything in the convention. Whereas here, I think I liken that space to just a big old warehouse.
It's
just a sectioned off and cut up so that it can house all the stages. And I really did enjoy the fact that everything was right there. It wasn't overcrowded. And you got plenty of time and space to see people and get to meet people, including.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, I used one of the iPhone apps that counts the steps. I did think first that I was walking more. Because it is a large space, it's very open, so you have this illusion that you, even though everything is right there, that you're walking a lot and there's queuing and all that. But at the same time, strangely enough, per day totals, I arrived to basically the same number of steps that I would spend in Vegas. I don't know why it happened. Perhaps it was, you know, we were within just this one hotel. You know, if you are using Rio, or even if you're in Gold Coast, it's reasonably close enough. And then you're just walking inside through all the corridors and everything. Whereas here, the hotels are, for the most part, were very close. And then you spend most of the walking inside that giant warehouse. So I don't know where the wash was, but strangely enough, I did spend about, it was very strange and curious that, you know, I usually spend about 10,000 to 12,000 steps a day in Vegas, and that's exactly the mark that I hit here. So that's, who knows, but regardless, but there is that, just that difference of how you perceive the space based on the fact that instead of convention facilities, you have a convention hall where everything is sort of in this one giant box.
I was going to say, I think the what can drive that behavior too is that, like, you're not spending a lot of time walking to get to stuff. You're actually spending a lot of time walking around the stuff that's there. So, like, you know, in Vegas, you can't do more than 5 or 6 turns around the whole convention without walking 10,000 steps sometimes. Whereas here, I mean, I could go around and that space several times, and there's always someone new to talk to or something new to get to, or you need to meet someone. And I think that's where it looks like a confined space that's small, but it's all, you know, like smoke and mirrors, I guess.
Well, it's like I said, it's just basically how differently the space is perceived, just basically the fact that it's just two different types of buildings. That's all there is to it. Just kind of to swing back as far as like the walking and everything, the hotels themselves, like the actual hotels where people were staying, are reasonably close. The hotel that I chose to stay in, the Hotel Metropole, I timed myself, and it would literally take me on average 4 to 5 minutes to get from the doors of the hotel to the inside where the entrance to the convention hall was. It was extremely convenient. I have to thank Sam from Trekkie Girls for recommending to this particular hotel. It's I suppose you can sort of say it's the equivalent of the convention hotel, because majority of the people seem to be staying there. That's where the parties were held and the get-togethers in the evenings at the bar. Also, a lot of the guests seem to be staying there. I mean, I can't even tell you how many guest actors I bumped into just walking through the lobby doors. So that was part of that was actually very nice, because I sometimes, you know, if I go to whichever Comic-Con, usually it can be anywhere between 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour walk to the closest hotel that I could probably afford to begin with, but basically those that provided convention rates. In this case, it was very close by, very convenient, and it was great. So it's actually one of those things, if I did choose to buy something, I would have been able to run out, put it back into my room, and run back in with very small you know, waste of time, basically. So I know that you stayed at a different hotel, Jesse, right?
Yeah, I stayed at
it was also a Hilton, but it's a different one.
Yeah, I stayed at the Hilton Garden Inn, which it was like a mile or two away, but it was really just a quick 10-minute walk from the hotel to the convention space. It was very convenient. We actually drove in from London on Saturday, so parking was also pretty convenient. I mean, there was plenty of parking. It was a little pricey, but the strange thing about the NEC is that, like, I guess they have more than one parking lot. So when you got there, they would ask you, where are you going? And we would say the NEC, because, you know, that's what I think I'm going. And they're like, no, what are you going to? And so when you tell them you're going to Star Trek, they give you some direction and how to validate your parking and all that stuff. So that was, that's the first time I saw, like, how big this place was. And then I got to see what portion of the space actually was dedicated to the Star Trek convention. So, and I didn't have like, so what I had thought before when I went was that like the people hung out at the various hotels, but it sounds to me like the parties and the hanging out was basically at the Metropole. Cause like, I didn't see anyone at my hotel at night. You know, there was two or three fans that had just come back the same time we did, but no one was hanging out there. If we wanted to hang out, we had to go to the Metropole to hang out with other fans. So that's the only, thing about staying at a hotel that wasn't the main one, is that, you know, you'd have to, you know, walk then to the other hotel to be able to partake in those after hours activities.
All right. I wanted very quickly to swing back to discussion of the NEC itself. Just to give people a basic idea, I mean, we already mentioned the, you know, the stages, for instance. But just, I think I will actually include the basic map so people had an idea how, what the space looked like. It's something that they very helpfully provided on online. Yeah. Portion of the hall was basically just dedicated to queuing. So it's you enter the hall where you would pick up your credentials. We discussed what types of tickets were in the previous episode. So, ticket packages would have the actual badges, and then, weekend tickets, well, it's just your basic simple wristband, and then those people attending single days would get a Star Trek themed stamp on their hands. The badges were actually kind of fun. I made sure to try and bump into as many different ticket packages as I could, because I was very curious to see what the artwork was like. Yeah. And well, they just basically followed the names of the badges. So Lieutenant ticket package had Lieutenant Uhura on it. The Commander package had Riker and Data, and Captain had Sisko, and the Admiral had Admiral Cornwell on it. That was a lot of fun. I actually did put a very good thought to how to present this, so that was very enjoyable. Now, I was doing the weekend, so I just had, you know, a plain wristband with the name of the event on it. So the security, it's not like Comic-Cons where you do get metal detectors very often at the entrances here in the States. It was just, you know, you basically go through the doors. There was three or four security guards that would poke around in your backpacks. I'm not quite sure how thorough they were, but basically security was very fast. And then everybody would just queue up in this giant hall. And the moment the time was on for convention to be officially open, they would just let everybody in into that one giant hall with all those areas, and people would just start queuing or walking around checking out the vendors, or just generally do whatever they felt like doing.
Yeah, I think that's an important distinction, the security, because that was one of the things that I saw that I experienced, that you could tell you were in a different country. So there weren't the metal detectors, and they weren't looking through the bags like for weapons. They were looking for like contraband, because you know they had food there, you know. So you know, the I mean, I'm not getting political, but the gun laws are different, so you wouldn't expect someone to bring in a gun into a European convention. So I think
they do have limitations on what sort of props people could bring. They did put it online as sort of, you know, precaution for those who would dress up and wanted to be as authentic as possible, depending what type of you know, character it was. So, you know, like metal looking weapons, all of that, not metal props, would not have been allowed. But actually, I don't think I even saw anyone. A lot of people wore costumes, but I didn't see anyone with, I don't know, I did see a batless, but it was very, very obviously a carton with just, you know, a metallic foil or something on top. So that sort of thing was obviously allowed. But yeah, generally speaking, yeah, it was very, very relaxed. Very relaxed going through that security tables, basically.
Yeah, and then the other security thing, I don't know if it's security or not, Marina, you've been to more conventions than me, but like the ability to go to where they were signing and take pictures of them signing without somebody kicking you out, that was amazing. Like I saw people doing it and I thought, what is going on here? There's no...
Yeah, in that regard, it's somebody, you know, like we talked about how, you know, I tend to be more, you know, like super prepared, and I try to find as much information. And you found out from your fellow, from your friends, you know, what to expect from the convention. But, you know, I was kind of looking at it, and the whole event was coming across a bit more like a signing show than anything else, because I noticed that, you know, and we'll talk about this later on as far as how the panels were set up, but majority of the people seemed to be mostly concentrating around that area where the photo op booths were and where the autographing area was. And that, just as you said, it appeared to be very, well, I suppose I would use the word relaxed, because nobody, even compared to a lot of Comic Cons where, you know, depending, of course, on what kind of, you know, on the name, you know, who's sitting at the table, people might be watching you like a hawk. You know, there's no taking photos while a person is autographing, sometimes no selfies, nothing like that. There were a couple of tables where they said, you know, please, you know, the person is not going to be offering selfies, that sort of thing. I might be mistaken, but I think there was a sign, no photos by Jason Isaacs' table, for instance. But for the most part, no, there were folks walking around with their smartphones, with actual cameras, taking photos while the actor, or just generally the guests, because they had a mixture of people sitting in that autographing zone. If they could just take the photos of a person autographing an item with them, if they could do a quick selfie, and everybody was fine. So I guess that's sort of, it's the conditions of this particular event, you know, that it's allowable at this particular event, because you don't get, I can't say that I saw any super huge queues that, I mean, they did last for hours, but because they have that virtual queuing, it was a bit more spread out throughout the day. So I'm sure it's a little bit difficult probably on the guests, because they were spending a lot of hours at their table signing. But at the same time, it seemed to be a bit more relaxed and a bit more, you want a selfie? Yeah, sure. You know, let's do this as soon as I'm done signing. A little bit of chatting. Headliner level guests did have more sizable crowds, obviously. But again, you know, that particular area was very well handled by the staff, I have to say. The volunteers that ran. Yeah, the whole thing, I mean, if you did want to do, I don't know, let's pick somebody that would have a large line. So Jason Isaacs, obviously, Kate Mulgrew, you know, any of the captains. You would go up, there would be a person sitting with, they're literally like little stubs, little tickets. They will give you a ticket, and that was just, you know, a number, that's your virtual queue. And then they would mark off on a little sign what batch of numbers, so to speak, we're signing. So it's, in a way, it's sort of equivalent to what we have in Vegas when, you know, you have a box of PDF tickets or hard tickets being, you know, signing. Only in case of Vegas, you do have either set times for those who are signing with the tickets, or people signing in the vendor room. So it's we're still talking about doing exactly the same way, doing exactly the same thing, only doing it in a slightly different way. I find it very fascinating. That's one of my favorite things to do at the conventions, just to kind of see, like, we're still doing exactly the same thing, only it's just a little tweak. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, I think what I saw, what was cool, though, was, like, you're right. Like, it's like in Vegas where they put up the number and say, now we're doing PDFs, whatever, you know, and you know, usually only see that for like when they're doing the gold signatures and all that stuff, right? But also, the virtual queuing was just interesting because people, even in Vegas, people will just sit there and wait for their number to be called. And the virtual queuing, people were just shopping until it was their turn to go.
And yeah,
they would go and check.
Again, it all comes down to cons and pros, because a lot of, as we know, a lot of the guests in Vegas sign in theaters. So where, if it's a main theater or secondary theater, programming is ongoing. So you do have access. You're not actually, I suppose, wasting time just standing in line. You can actually listen in and, you know, take photos from the side. Whereas here, you know, the option is, you know, while you're waiting for your turn at the autographing, is to actually go around and check out, you know, maybe go do a photo op or check out the shopping. As far as the paneling, it's a little bit different because, as we mentioned in the previous episode, the main theater, I shouldn't call it main theater, the enterprise stage, is actually paid talks. So bigger panels, panels with headliner guests, that's not exactly, you know, easily accessible, just go and, you know, and watch it. But yeah, it's basically, it's the same thing. You know, Vegas, you wait, you know, you can still listen to the panel. You can leave the queue and actually do go to the vendor hall, I suppose, in Vegas. I would sometimes do that, knowing that, you know, I still have, I don't know, 30, 40, 60 people in front of me.
Yeah. The thing, Marina, that I saw too was like, I'm just going to give it to the UK and to, I guess, Europeans in general, but like, they know how to line up. Like, there's no fighting for space in line. There's the respect that, yes, your turn, you go ahead of me. You know, it's not like when you try to get on an airplane, you know, and.
Yeah, but you know something? I'm going to posit that that's generally true of Trek fandom. I have never seen anybody else self-organize as well as Trekkies do during a Star Trek convention. It is it's a sight to behold. As far as I'm concerned, you know, especially if you have people who have been to other conventions, they will start doing something, and before you know it, there's a line, and everybody is like, you know, there's no fuss, no muss, no scandal. Everybody's lined up and waiting.
No ropes. You just line up. I was just shocked. I was like, wow, you know, in Vegas, we have to at least get a rope somewhere, you know, in here.
Well, true, but at the same time, still, I mean, you know, a line forms, it's going to be a line without any issues for the most part.
No, that was good.
Yeah. So just to kind of finish up speaking about the hall itself, what I did appreciate was that it didn't feel crowded, even though technically, you know, regardless what you were doing, you know, queuing for the autographs or the photo ops or to get into the paid talks, or you were actually sitting because, you know, the other two stages were actually open. It didn't feel crowded, even though everybody was literally within that same one hall. Maybe because the space is also very tall. It had plenty of air circulation. So it felt, you know, like, yeah, there's room to move around. It wasn't like, those who have been to, say, New York Comic Con. Javits is a very large convention center. Nevertheless, there are more than enough moments during the day when you feel like, you know, sardines in a, you know, it's too crowded, everybody's standing way too close. Nothing like that here. You know, I tried to find out what the actual attendance was, and nothing official, so it would be wonderful to find out. I heard a number 11,000 being thrown about for the entire convention over 3 days, which sounds pretty reasonable given the sizes of the theaters. So it never felt like, oh my God, that's an insane number of people here. Yes, Saturday was pumping. As it tends to be, Saturday was a very busy day, predictably very intense. Friday was surprisingly busy. I didn't expect quite so many people to attend. And of course, you know, you get the Sunday gradually relaxing. But overall, this was, I enjoyed the fact, you know, they did pretty good planning in terms of putting all those areas together, you know, and it didn't feel as crowded as one would think everybody being in one spot.
And I'm happy with the, they had the food selection. So if you're going to compare and contrast, like there was way more food options in Birmingham than I've ever seen in the convention area in Vegas, right? So there were like truck type food and then restaurants within the convention center, plenty of liquor if you wanted that, you know. They even had a little booth that had fudge, and I still have some fudge that I haven't eaten, but
yes.
I know.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, maybe because it was an actual food court. I mean, I don't want it to, there was separate, as you said, you know, there were separate locations within the convention center. So that's outside the convention hall that people could actually go and eat at. But there was an actual like a food court area within the court. Within the convention hall, way in the back, that I thought provided wonderful selection. I mean, mm-hmm. I tried to stop by a couple of times, and then even though we do advise everyone to please take care of yourself during the convention, I was so excited running around, I barely ate, which is not a good thing to do. Please don't do it. But I did stop by to check out, you know, and I had like a hot dog and some fries, and it was just wonderful. You know, there were some tables set up. So, you know, a long day on your feet, there's actually a place to sit down, you know, share a table with a random person and talk track. It was fun that they had that little beer cart right in the middle of it. So basically, not unlike Quarks, where even though nobody was really looking, but that was I think it was sort of expected that if people were buying beer or cocktails at our Quarks, you probably should just drink it there and then move around the convention facilities in Vegas. Here it's like, no, it's like right in the middle of it, bam, there's beer, take it, you know, grab a cup and keep shopping.
Yeah, it was like, that was unusual to see. You didn't have to go to quote unquote a bar, like it was just there. And I think that was pretty cool. And then the other area, I don't know if you spent time there, Marina, but I sure did. They had like a video gaming area, which, mm-hmm. which like I wish we would bring to other conventions. So it was like standalone PCs, you know, for PC gaming. They had some PS4 gaming. It was really cool because they had retro games as well. And I mean, it's just like I was a kid again, you know, playing these games
Actually, two separate areas, interestingly enough. They didn't just do like, oh, it's a gaming area. I looked it up. It was one corner of it was precisely that. It was the computer games going from really, really retro to more or less modern. And then just to the side of it was actually specifically area for the board games. So they had some of the more recent ones like Star Trek Ascendancy, I think, was there. Mm-hmm. And there were actually folks sitting there. And I kind of tried to observe from, you know, every once in a while look up because I just passed by that area just to see what it was. And yeah, there were folks just sitting there for hours. And, you know, one person would get up and leave. Somebody else would join in. And it was wonderful. Everybody was enjoying themselves. As far as the food was concerned, something that we had pretty extensive discussions about for the SCLD 101 series. You know, we know that, you know, it's very important, you know, to have the snacks and the water with you during the day because, you know, take care of yourself. So those are long days. You know, you kind of forget to eat and drink, especially drink. In this case, this is one of those things that I found radically different from SCLD. You know, you either have to budget to purchase stuff at the hotel or at the NAC, or in case you do have friends attending with cars, you know, ask them for assistance with groceries, because I found it actually very inconvenient that there was no, you know, quote unquote, easy way to get water. It's either I buy it right there at NAC, and sometimes, to be honest, I mean, Saturday, I actually didn't have time to actually stop by the food court and check out anything. I ended up, I think, buying water at the bar in the hotel once the convention day was over. But it wasn't the same thing as in Vegas where, you know, you kind of you have access to, you know, grocery stores easily enough where you can kind of stock up before the convention begins. So that's something. And obviously that's kind of something that I forgot to mention. There are no water stations. I don't know. I did wrote like a little feedback online saying that maybe it's something that the convention host should look into. I don't know how realistic it is, because I'm sure that, you know, they would prefer people go and buy water at, you know, in that food court area in the back of the convention hall. But it wasn't as convenient and easy as we have it at STLV, where, you know, you have your bottle of water, you can refill it at any given time in the main theater or elsewhere where you have those bubblers standing around.
Yeah, and I know I got water a couple of times just by going up to one of the carts and saying, can I have a glass of water? Like, so they were accommodating in that respect. But for someone who isn't native to the country or to that area, you know, it's tap water. And so tap water is different from area to area. So I had a little difficulty with the tap water that I had to switch to bottled. So I think too, you know, it wasn't extremely hot. We weren't talking about 100 degree weather outside. So,
well, very true. But you still need to hydrate during the day.
Oh,
you
yes.
know, you do move around a lot.
Yes. Yeah. And I think, I don't know how the nightlife was, but like, you know, it's not a convention that I felt like I had a reason to stay up all night and hang out, because unless there was a party that went to all hours in the metropole, I mean, there was not much going on after the convention.
Yeah, I have to say that is, even though I did try to plan to go to at least a Saturday one, I ended up nixing the whole idea as far as the official parties. And in this case, simply by virtue that, you know, the time difference, I flew in literally as the convention was beginning. So I, you know, by the time I finally made it to my room on Friday night, I was on my feet for 33 hours straight. And so I basically figured, you know what, I'm here to check out the convention, enjoy my time with the friends, meet, you know, some of the guests I was really excited to see, either for the first time or again. And I just said, you know what, not nightlife in this case. And I would be done with the convention, go eat something, hang out a little bit with the folks, and then just go straight back to my room.
Yeah, and you know, I same thing for me. You know, I had a group of friends we were with. We stayed up late and watched silly movies and whatnot. But you know, it wasn't an all night kind of thing. So I think Marina, if we can roll back, I'd like to get your impression on. So we had the three theaters, right? And the one theater was, and this will be unusual for people who don't go to Comic-Cons, right? Because I know this is common in Comic-Con, but you know, there one theater was all everything they had. You had to pay to see, right?
Yep.
So, can you go into that? Because you went to a couple of those things that you paid to see.
You know, generally speaking, I did try to experience as much as I could. So I did set out when I was planning for this convention, and it was actually very exciting when all my planning kind of started to fall into place. So I did go check out the panels, both the paid talks and first come, first serve talks, basically. I did try to do all the types of photo ops that the convention was offering. I got a few autographs and checked out the exhibits and everything. So speaking of the actual stages, I did already describe the basic one. So the main stage was separate with blackout curtains. Out of all the experiences that I had this particular 3 days, I have to say that this was probably the only thing that could be turned as non-positive experience. So the equivalent of main theater, I asked one of the staff, and they said it sits about 3,500 people. So it's much smaller than the main theater in Vegas. They do seating by package, both in terms of actually allowing people in. So the admirals will walk in first and get in, you know, into their area, those seats dedicated to them, then followed by captains, commanders, lieutenants, and then the general admission. Now, unlike Vegas, where we also have, you know, seating by package, although you don't have the restrictions. I mean, people can come and go in whichever order they want. They did allow people to move up. If they saw that there were giant sort of empty areas, they would say, okay, let's start bringing in the lieutenants closer, the general admissions closer. Because I only had experience with the Enterprise stage twice. That was the opening ceremony and one of the paid talks on Saturday with Kate Mulgrew. that it, when I did try that opening ceremony, which was out of pure curiosity, because we don't have opening ceremonies in at the conventions in the States, it took me kind of by surprise, because at that point already I was like, okay, I figured how everything is. I figured where everything is. And I already met several folks, both the fans and the guests, and one so excited. And that was sort of a downer, because I'm not going to sugarcoat. The main theater, the Enterprise stage, came across like a giant dark cave with this one little spot of light with the stages. There is no overhead lighting. The rigging is basically just with the stages. The lights are shining straight down on whoever's standing on the stage, you know, the host and the guests. And you have this four, there are four lights. These four lights that were just randomly sort of blinking and strobing into the audience. Which actually on Friday was problematic, and I know that there were several complaints, and I think they kind of toned down the intensity of the light because it was like blinding flashes into your eyes. So in terms of, you know, for those people who enjoy, well, A, you enjoy actually seeing everything in front of you, and also if you enjoy photographing, taking pictures of the guests or panels, whatever is going on the stage, the lighting is frankly just horrible. So in that regard, that was a bit of a downside. So it wasn't as great of, I mean, it was wonderful to see the guests. The panels were all still great, great stuff. A lot of fun, great discussions, people asking wonderful questions. But that part kind of threw me, that, you know, you basically, you're just sitting there and you can barely see anything. In terms of sound, the Enterprise stage had probably just generally better equipment than the other two theaters. And they did have those curtains, which did help with, you know, they prevented some of the sound being dispersed, because like I said, this is a very tall, large concrete and metal box. You know, if you're sitting in the open space, like the Voyager stage or the Excelsior stage, unless you were like in the first, I don't know, 5 to 10 rows, the sound was just going out into, you know, into the air.
You did have to focus because it's so open, you would hear the other stages, even though they're corner, opposite.
The sound
corner.
Was just basically, if the open space, the sound was just bouncing all around. Some of the vendors had music playing, so you can actually hear it. You know, so it's kind of like this, the Enterprise stage was a little bit better, so you could hear the guests. The other two stages, not so much, unless you were sitting up close, and the sound was basically bouncing all over the place between those, you know, all the areas. So, so the Enterprise stage was, unfortunately, the biggest downside for me. I know that perhaps some other people enjoy it because we're not talking, the same amount of money that's being spent, you know, on the tickets, where you do have the flexibility where you can go in with general admissions and then just pick out the paid talks that, you want to experience. But, you know, by comparison, you can do still the same thing in Vegas, but then with general admission, you have access to pretty much every single panel that's available on the programming schedule. And you have professional lighting and overhead lights in all your theaters where you can actually see where you're going. So that's, you know, I don't want it to make it sound like, oh, this was like the worst thing. It just, by comparison with all the excitement that and all the wonderful things that I did get to experience this convention, this was probably the only thing that was, you know, I would not rate as high, you know, compared to everything else.
It was just different. Like for, I could only go for the weekend and I didn't find a package that, was worth it, if you will. So like I got the weekend package, and if I wanted anything extra, I would have to pay for it. Now, the difficult part for me is that I tend to be a bit frugal. And so, you know, when I saw the Discovery cast had a panel that I would have to pay for, in my head, I'm going, well, I just saw them in Vegas, so I'm okay.
To be honest, I did the same thing. Maybe because I do have, you know, it is a wonderful thing to actually have had the experience of meeting all these wonderful actors before. So I don't, you know, it's so rare. There are far less convention you know, scene going on in Europe, for instance. Mm-hmm. So, of course, it's you know, I met a gentleman who was, I believe he was from Germany. He was literally set on getting an autograph from every single guest who was present at the convention, because, you know, what's another opportunity that he would have, you know, something like that. So going back, Enterprise stage was a little bit of a downside. The panels themselves were still great. I did enjoy, well, Kate Mulgrew is my favorite, so the panel was absolutely terrific. The Voyager stage, I did go to, I think, about two or three different panels, and an auction. I thought, you know, maybe there will be something terribly, I don't know, fascinating about the auction, but it actually was exactly the same thing. Yes. that we have experience with. So they were auctioning off some books and signed posters or signed photos. There were, I think, a couple of unusual things. So, like, they had floor plans of the studios. I believe it was like a Deep Space Nine. So it was an actual blueprint that you can, you know, somebody won, and I'm sure they went off and got it signed by one of the actors right away. I did see Fred Hayes, the former NASA astronaut. He did a panel about Shuttle Enterprise. So that was wonderful. Pardon me. Excelsior stage was actually the equivalent of what we have at STLV as CBS All Stage, All Access stage. It was also an open area. It did have sort of like this enclosure, tall panels, but acoustically it was a similar thing. Unless you were in the first 10 rows or so, the sound would just disperse into the air and it was a little bit difficult to hear. That one was fun. They had a warp quiz, which is very similar to what Jordan Hoffman does, you know, that people would, yeah. The only thing is that in Vegas, you do have a limitation. You have to sign up, and it's only about four people that can play at the same time, if I'm not mistaken. In this case, everybody would have, who wanted to participate, everybody would have to download a quiz, connect to the a specific Wi-Fi channel, and then that's it. That's how you would play. There were like little buttons that would appear in the app, and a person would read off the question, and you press the button, and it would just, everything, you will see the results popping up on the screen. And it would tell you who's leading, you know, the number of points that every person got. And it was very, very exciting. It was just pure Trek fun. That was on Saturday morning, I believe. And I mean, people were literally just laughing. It was, you know, wonderful fun to have. I also did, let's see, I went to Alice Krieger panel and a panel on the Star Trek and sexuality by Trekkie girls on Sunday. So all in all, you know, I tried to kind of check out everything within the time constraints. And all in all, I had wonderful time. Even with those downsides with the Enterprise, I enjoyed myself a lot.
Yeah, I went to a few of the panels. I know I saw Jane Brooke and Chase Masterson, and then I did spend, like, when I first got there, you know, like I mentioned, it just seemed like a big box. Well, the big box was full because it was Saturday, and I had to take a minute because it was overwhelming, right? Because I wasn't used to what I was looking at. So I spent some time in actually the little, what's that room they called, with the screening room where they were playing episodes. Mm-hmm. Star Trek. And that was just a nice place to just kind of just sit down and relax and gather yourself, because until you know where everything is, I think it's just psychosomatic on my part, but like, until you know where everything is, it seems like it's chaos. Like, I don't know where everything is. You walk in and there's all these queues in front of you, and the vendors are God knows where. And, you know, there's a star over here and, you know, boxes over there where it's a stage. So it takes a minute to get it down. And once you do, it's great. But I spent my weekend there trying to find people that I knew would be there. So like, it was like a big scavenger hunt. I was like, where are my Nicholas? Where are my Nicholas? I know they're here, you know? And then I did the same with other people that I knew that I had met in Vegas that were around. And it was really cool to kind of make plans to meet somebody. And even Marina, you and you said you're in the middle. I'm like, well, I don't know what the middle is. What's next? Right? So we bet in front of Trek. You know, it was,
you know, it's you know, it's you mentioned, you know, trying to meet people. I didn't actually kind of set out, you know, to tell people, okay, I'm going to be right there. Let's meet up and do something. I figured, you know, like, we just want to walk in. Everybody has access to Facebook for the most part. You know, at any given moment, anybody would message me, are you already here or anything? Because people did know that I was coming. But it all ended up being much funnier because all of them bumped into me. And some of the folks that, you know, at least we recognize each other because we have our actual photos posted on Facebook as profile photos. It was like, oh, wonderful. We're finally meeting in person and how are you and everything. And then about, I don't know, 3 or 4 people, they recognized me because they have, I actually didn't recognize them because unfortunately they have something else on their photos. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, hey, you're Marina. I know you're from either the group or the page or whatever. And it was just, it wasn't so much a scavenger hunt. It's just like I'm walking around in the middle of this giant crowd of Star Trek fans in Birmingham, UK, and people are somehow recognizing. So
yeah,
that
weird.
Was a little bit weird, yes, yeah. But a whole lot of fun. A whole lot of fun.
Yeah, it was interesting with all the accents there as well. So when you hear your name and you're like, where do I know you from? Even people that I did know, you know, and I've had the pleasure of being on the Star Trek cruise. So there were people that I met on the Star Trek cruise that were in at Destination Star Trek. And so it was just cool to see people in their own spot, and they knew exactly what to do. They knew what to expect. And, you know, I don't know that they get as many conventions there as we do here, you know, in the US, but this was their biggest convention, and they're very proud of it. Very excited that they're gonna, it was every couple years, and they're actually having it again next year. I guess it's getting that big. So.
Yeah, that's right. That was the big announcement, which is, I suppose it's just a testament of how successful the convention is that they will do another one next year instead of 2020. And, you know, if an opportunity comes along in, well, primarily financial terms, I suppose. If I do have an ability to go, I would really like to go again, because this was a wonderful convention to experience.
Yeah, I would definitely go again. I mean, now that I know what to expect, and I think, mm-hmm. I think Marina, you and I had this discussion there, and it's just, you know, it's not apples to apples. Star Trek Las Vegas is Star Trek Las Vegas, and Destination Star Trek is Destination Star Trek. And there are two different experiences. Just like when I went on a cruise, that's a different experience. They're all different.
Yeah.
And as long as you're prepared for something different and you don't try to make it what it's not, then you'll have a good time. I mean, there were things I didn't like. There were things that I loved. And it's like any other convention. You take the good and you leave the bad, and you know, give feedback that's constructive, which is I
absolutely
think
you're absolutely correct. I mean, if you have to acknowledge that there are differences, mm-hmm. simply because these just two different models of conventions. It certainly does help if you have prior experience with any other kind of convention. So I'm talking about non-creation model, simply because, you know, Destination Star Trek has a lot of Comic-Con elements to it. So if you're familiar with those, you'll recognize it immediately. This is how things are run. So you'll be very comfortable, you know, figuring out what you do with the photo ops or the autographing or whatever. I suppose I can't stress it hard enough is that preparation is key. You know, just coming in nilly-willy tends to just rob you of time that you could be spending actually checking out stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, you go into a new convention, it does help to kind of like, okay, they posted the map, let me see that, at least I can sort of figure out where, you know, this is the entrance, you know, that already helps. Yeah.
It's important, and I'll tell you why, because I went there, so I knew you were preparing and you were organizing, you're getting yourself together, because I think that's how you do conventions. And I very mm-hmm. much went with, I'm going to let someone tell me about it, which was our last episode. And then I said, you know, I'm not going to study a lot. I'm just going to show up and see what happens. And there were two different convention experiences. I finally got to a space where I understood what was going on and I knew how it worked. But I would say that, I think you've convinced me to become a planner. At least a little bit. I didn't even know where the front door was. So, you know,
well, it, it, You know, it sometimes, you know, if there are specific rules, or if, you know, it's like, okay, for instance, a lot of conventions have a specific way of doing photo ops. You know, like in Vegas, we know that there is the queuing and this is what you do. And there are, you know, there are certain requests that I made, you know, like sort of like don't pick up the guests, that sort of obvious stuff. And then, you know, this is how the photo ops will be printed and this is where you pick them up, etc. At other conventions, you have the Instaprint technology, you pick it up, they actually have special scanning things that where, you know, you're not going to leave the photo op area unless they scan you out. So those sort of things, I usually try to check it out and see the descriptions of how does it actually work. So I'm not just standing there like with my, you know, like a deer caught in the headlights, not knowing what the heck is going on. So on one hand, I totally get that that's an approach where, yeah, you bought the tickets and you know roughly what's there. And then, yeah, whatever happens, which is, you know, the wonderful, unexpected things that occur at the conventions, whatever may come your way, it's all exciting and wonderful to experience. As opposed to, I suppose, a certain way of you can over-prepare when you're like with all your printed maps and everything and you following the lines exactly across the floors and everything else. That's other way of doing it. I'm not that bad of a, you know, like heavy duty planner, but I do prefer to, you know, check it out and look into the details before I go to a brand new convention, especially something that's overseas.
Yeah. And, I think one of the things we didn't mention was real quick, the photo ops. So you know how in Vegas we have like the Borg queue, the Borg regeneration, and the City on the Edge of Forever little thingy, and we have just a bunch of like essentially you just take pictures with the triples and whatnot. So here,
yeah, the photo sets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here we had a few of those sets. So there was a TOS bridge, there was the Next Gen bridge, there was a Klingon bridge. And some of those were pretty cool, but like you had to pay to take pictures in them. And it wasn't just like one price for two, it's like per person. So we wanted to do some photo ops. So we didn't realize that we were going to end up paying, you know, almost £100 for five people to be in a photo. So we opted to do what was free, you know, which was the transport pretty much. So again, it's in terms of expectations, you know, and so you just have to manage those. You're not going to get those in the Destination Star Trek, but if you prepare for them, you can definitely do it.
Yeah. But those photo sets were very enjoyable. I mean, you could take a picture of a set itself for free, sort of like in Vegas, but yes, you know, if you wanted to be on the bridge or, I believe they also had like captain's chairs, but those were behind the curtains so that you couldn't take the pictures of them by themselves. You would have to pay the money, you know, to be on the bridge and whatever.
And mind you, you get a good quality photo. They take your picture and you get a picture back. It's not like you're there with your cell phone, but still, if you just want to take a picture with your cell phone, you just get the background. You're not going to be in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the good thing about those photo sets, something that needs to be said, is that they were all just standing wide in the open. So occasionally when they would have scheduled photo ops with the guest stars, so you would have William Shatner sitting in his command chair in the middle of the TOS bridge, or you would have, I don't know, Terry Farrell, same thing, TOS bridge, but they would fill it with tribbles. Or you had, which was the most amazingly unique photo op, I think, of the entire weekend, Armin Shimerman made up as Quark standing at the Quark's bar photo set.
That was awesome. I got a picture actually, of Morrell on the Klingon bridge, so I was pretty excited.
That's it, exactly. So this is all happening out in the open, so there would be pretty sizable crowds of people just standing around observing. I mean, when was the last time you saw Captain Kirk right there on the bridge, really?
And of course, cool too, is they didn't
something,
have...
Something,
go ahead. Sorry, Marina. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. Something that, unlike the autographing area, in those cases, the staff was actually, they were watching like hawks. You could not take photos during those special photo shoots. Mm-hmm. So you can stand there and observe, you know, for the entire duration of the photo shoot, you know, as long as you want. But, you know, taking photos with your cameras or with your smartphones, no, big no. So that was an interesting experience. That's not, that was unlike Vegas at all. I mean, we do have that we've had both Walter Koenig and William Shatner and Michelle Nichols do photo ops on the original series bridge in Vegas. But that was probably the limit of it. Whereas here you certainly had a much greater variety in terms of, you know, guest actors doing specialty photo shoots in with a special background. That was a lot of fun. I did do the Armin Shimerman one, and enormous thanks to him, because not only the fact that he agreed to put on the makeup again after 20 plus years, he actually stood there in this thing with, I don't even know how many photos were taken, but that photo shoot lasted at least 3 hours, if not longer. I mean, it was already 2 hours by the time I finally got to my place in line, and there was still plenty of people behind me. So that was one unbelievable experience.
That's pretty cool. And I know, like, one of the things that I enjoyed the most was, you know, so when the actors come out to either do their photo ops or do their autograph sessions, I mean, they have to walk in the crowd. There's no secret back door, right? Because it's a big box.
Yeah.
And it was nice to see them come out, like Doug Jones, especially, like as he's walking to his table, he's hugging everybody, you know, like Doug Jones, I guess.
Apparently. Oh, he's a hugger.
And the other actors, similarly, you know, they were shaking hands and saying hi. And it was neat to see them interact. And it was neat to see, you know, Trek fans do respect, right? They're, for the most part, their talent. So, you know, it was nice to see just that an actor can walk through this, through the crowd without being mobbed for pictures like the paparazzi, you know? So, you know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Speaking generally about the photo ops, my apologies. Speaking generally about the photo ops. So the official photo ops, so we're not talking about the photo sets. That was a special thing arranged at separate times. The actual photo shots were done in photo booths. Unlike Vegas, where we have just one photo op room, they actually set up three separate photo booths, A, B, and C. And basically the same thing. You would show up, you know, 10, 15 minutes before the scheduled time. There would be a staff member that would basically call out batches. That's how they would do the photo ops. If you pre-purchased the ticket, there would be a batch number on the ticket. And they would say, you know, batch one, batch two, and then they would arrange everybody. The ticket packages would go first. So if there were any admirals, captains, et cetera, in whichever batch, I suppose, they would all go up front and be lined up according to the ranking of the packages. And then the people who bought the tickets at the convention everybody would be in the back. All in all, pretty smooth. The majority of the staff that I did observe had very good hang of, you know, like how to do this very efficiently. I do have to say that probably is also sort of somewhat, I wouldn't call it a downside, because this is definitely not a negative thing. It's just generally the constraints of, I suppose, of physical space. In those cases, when they had a headliner level guest, so when they had the photo shoots with, say, either William Shatner or Kate Mulgrew, the latter is something that I actually experienced personally. The number of people that showed up in the number of batches was pretty substantial. So in those cases, the crowding kind of inhibited the normal queuing. So it just looked like this giant mess of people, and nobody really knows what's going on. And the poor folks, the staff that's running the photo booth, trying to basically kind of say, okay, if it's not your badge, please move away from the area, because we literally don't have the room to queue the people. Mm-hmm. So that part was a little bit unpleasant, because, you know, all of a sudden you do get that, you know, oh, there's no personal space, because there's like three batches worth of people, just everybody standing shoulder to shoulder next to each other. So that part was not particularly impressive. I mean, I don't think we actually have that in Vegas. And actually, I don't think I've seen that necessarily at Comic-Cons, but that it depends on the Comic-Con, because, you know, it depends which company is running the actual photo shoot. So generally speaking, the crowding was well controlled, you know, depending where you look, like the main, I suppose you can call it the promenade. So that's like the central portion of the convention hall next to the autographing area. As I mentioned earlier, that part was pretty decently controlled. I never saw any kind of unruly crowd. The photo ops had that issue only when you had really somebody who attracted a lot of fans who wanted to take photos. I did do several photo ops, as I mentioned already, Kate. And I did do, well, Cidic is a very rare bird at the convention, so I couldn't resist, and I bought it. And I also bought Doug Jones, even though I just saw him in Vegas. He's just such a wonderful, wonderful gentleman and a wonderful guest that it's you know, almost irresistible. Did you do any photo ops at all during the convention, or you just observed?
I just observed because I still I'm going on the cruise in January, and my whole thought was I'll see all those people there, and it's a more intimate photo op on the cruise. So I wanted to save some cash because, you know, we flew a long way to get there.
Oh, absolutely. To finish off the discussion on the photo ops, like most Comic-Con type events, the photos are printed instantly. So they snap the photo, you literally wait like a minute, and they have three or four, I think, printing machines right there. The photo pops out. The person who's, I don't know, supposedly kind of in charge of quality control, they look it over. If they see that person blinked, there's a glare from, I don't know, a flash or something. If somebody turned their head, the bottom line is something is not particularly okay with the photo. They will say, okay, here's a, like, they give like a special pink slip, I think. And they say, well, you know, here's basically go back in line and have your photo retaken. They do not give you the messed up photo. So like in Vegas, if you blinked like twice in a row, Chris will print those photos and you can actually pick them up afterwards if you want to. In this case, no. If you say yourself, I don't like the photo, I would like to have it retaken, they'll give you the slip to go back in line. They will tear it up. Or if they say, okay, yeah, the photo is definitely not good, here you go, go back, have it retaken, they will just rip up the bad photos, and that's basically it. So I saw that there was a lady with a small child, and it took the photographer several tries to actually make sure that everybody was looking in the camera, including the kid. And then they said, like, well, you have these two photos and they're both kind of okay, but you have to choose one. You can't have both. That's the unfortunate thing. But bottom line is the photos are printed instantly. You don't need to scan out. You just basically take it. If everything is fine, you just walk away. Now, unlike both Comic Cons and unlike Star Trek Las Vegas, you cannot get the JPEGs ordered. Well, in case of Comic Cons, you very often can pre-order JPEGs. But very, you know, Vegas, we just fill out that paper with numbers, and you can sort of, you know, just give it to Chris or his staff to get the JPEGs later on. You cannot do that at the event. As it stands right now, I was actually about to email the host and find out, you know, how exactly can you get the electronic version. They actually posted October 23rd, I think, the photos from the event are being processed, and as soon as they're done, they're going to put it all online. So those people who went and they're not aware of the fact that you actually can get JPEGs, it's showmasters.photoshelter.com. They have the listing of all their events, and this is where the processed electronic versions of the photos will be posted. Hopefully soon. You do have to pay for it. How much? I am not sure. I heard different values mentioned, but bottom line is you can purchase a JPEG. It's going to happen at some point. I don't know when.
We'll add that to the show notes, Marina. That way people will have that if they want.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we will post the map and a couple of links that should be helpful. Now we talk about the gaming zone. Did you check out any of the other stuff? What did you think about just the vendors and sort of outside of the meet and greet, photo op, autographing, all the other stuff that the convention has to offer?
You know, the vendors were... how do I put it so it doesn't sound like I'm being fussy, but they weren't unique. You know, it's kind of, actually we've seen some of these vendors before, you know, in other conventions. But the merchandise wasn't unique. Like, you know, in Vegas, you'll get a good assortment of, you know, antique toys or something like that. You know, they didn't have much of that. It was pretty much off the shelf type of stuff. The gaming zone, again, I had said it was my favorite just because you got to sit and relax and play games. The those vendors who weren't necessarily selling anything, like Larry Nemechek and those guys, you know, some of the authors and stuff, it was neat to see a different selection of those things I hadn't seen before. So I did learn some things seeing those folks. They also had like the Star Trek, I don't know what to call it. It's like the liquor, you know, the vodka and the bourbon.
The Silver Screen Company. Yes.
Yes. So they were there kind of displaying what they had coming up and coming and whatnot. So I never saw those bottles firsthand. You know, I saw a couple of them when I visited friends, but to actually see them all together, like, makes me want to open up my own Quarks at my house. So that would be.
Yeah. I've been lucky enough with, again, I suppose that's one of, it kind of falls into that category. I've had the experience with it, so I can relax and just observe. I have actually pre-ordered both the vodka and the bourbon. And I do, so I have them in my collection. I don't know if I'm going to open and try them, but I have seen those bottles. But I was very excited to see that a brand new Star Trek liquor is coming out in the coming months. And that's going to be a Scotch whiskey called Montgomery Scott. So that's actually a lot of fun. But it was wonderful to see them because it kind of shows you that, even though this is a separate entity in the sense that it's put on by a different convention host, the vendors do have commonality because, well, at this point, I mean, these are official events. So you will see a lot of the licensed product available. In a way, it was comforting. Actually, there were two vendors that I've met personally before. So it was kind of nice. It was sort of in the same vein as meeting fellow fans. I just stopped by and was like, you know, hello, Martin, and how are you? And we just stopped, you know, chatted a little bit about this and that. So that part was wonderful. You mentioned the fudge vendor. That's always fun when you actually get somebody who's very unusual, obviously doesn't fall into the whole license area. Yes, yes. It's the Galloway Fudge, I believe.
Yeah.
Galloway Company. The wonderful thing was that they went extra distance. They renamed their general fudge selections. So it was like Czech of Citrus or something like that. And plus they actually poured some fudges in the shape of, you know, like the Live Long and Prosper hand or like little communicators. I wanted to pick up some of those and bring back as sort of souvenirs. And they apparently sold out completely by the time I showed up on Sunday when I was like, okay, I'm packing tonight. Everything was gone.
I picked up
some of the regular fudge for some evening tea for myself, and that was it.
That's what I did. And I can't eat a lot of sugar, but I got four big bars of fudge, each with their own Star Trek names that I can't remember. But I just remember it was inexpensive because I paid like £11 for a good amount of fudge.
Yeah.
And it was on Sunday, so maybe it was a sale. I don't know. But it was, I still have it, and I shall make it my mission to eat it all.
So all in all, there was, just generally speaking, I mean, if a person hasn't necessarily seen what sort of vendors are expected to be at the Star Trek convention, it was a fairly good coverage. So there were people selling T-shirts. There were folks selling pretty much everything, I suppose, off of that licensed list that we've seen recently, you know, the wallets and the those goblin, what they call it, those blankets and everything. There's a couple. I'm like, okay, this is like looking partly at ThinGeek, partly at StarTrek.com shop, you know, so the stuff that you can actually find online. There were a couple of vendors that did have vintage stuff, if you will. So there were older toys, and they were interesting to look at simply because those were all European or specifically UK releases. So it's not, you know, you would look at it, you know, flip it, and it's going to say, you know, yes, it's made in UK. It's not in the States or China or what have you. So that was kind of interesting to see the toys from the 90s that were not American. What else was, the only thing was I found a little bit odd is how spread out they were. Did you notice the vendor area? It wasn't just this one area where the vendors were. It was, you actually had to be a little bit creative in your exploration because, you know, you started out the sort of like the entrance with the promenade, the central part was starting. So you had autographing in one area and you had some of the merchants, including the official merchandise for the event, kind of starting up right in the center. So you had like the fan sets were there and everything else. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, and the rest of the vendors are all the way there in the back. And some of them are behind those areas where the screening area is, and they photo booth see. So it's kind of like, there were some vendors that I discovered like Sunday morning. I'm like, I didn't realize there were tables here because it's kind of completely separate area, you know, away from everybody else. They I don't know why they did that.
Yeah. Interspersed with a lot of the props that were around. And I had a couple of times where like I was looking at a vendor at their stuff, but it wasn't the person standing there was with another vendor. So they were like cross-powered. So I had to figure out who was selling what. So it was good. Did you buy anything? I know I bought a mug. I bought like a Nebula coffee mug, which I'd never
seen. And I ended up buying that little plush tardigrade from Fansets. It was actually, I think it's called Heroes in Action, which is now, I think they're together with Fansets and they basically going to be representing them at the conventions. But so it was a kind of like a joint booth. So it had the usual selection of those amazing pins, plus a little bit of extra that Heroes in Action themselves were selling. And they had a whole bunch of this. Now I missed out on it in Vegas because apparently somebody, I forget which vendor, brought it to Vegas and those little wonderful blue plushies sold out literally in the first day. Or in the first 2 days. And look, well, I really would like that. You know, like, look at this wonderful, I know, I'm sorry, I have a thing for plush toys. So I got this. I have to admit that I was actually very limited in what I could bring back with me. So I had to be very, very selective. And I'll explain later on when we talk about travel a little bit. So basically, I was looking at it. I did buy the printed schedule, which is actually something to mention because those who have been to STLD know that they would just hand out those schedules. You want to get five of them. You want to get 10 of them. And if they run out of the schedules, they will bring more of them during the convention weekend. Here it's a little bit different. It was a very beautiful printed booklets, very high quality, wonderful glossy things. You actually have to pay for them. So yeah, you can buy as many as you want, but during the weekend, it's actually £10, which is not cheap. And so, you know, but it makes it for a wonderful souvenir. So I was very happy that I got one. Now, I kind of pointed out like that during the weekend, it was £10. As it turns out, at the end of the day on Sunday, the sales on official merchandise of the event, so those T-shirts and everything that says Destination Starship on it, the photo tape from the photo table that are being sold for the people who are getting autographs from the guests, all of that goes on completely unbelievable sale. So you can, I'm trying to remember how much the photos were, £5, £6, something like that, because I did get one for Fred Hayes' autograph. You can get even large ones, the ones that are, you know, like almost poster size photos. You can get them for £1 a piece at the end of the day on Sunday when obviously no, very few people are still signing.
Wow,
so, but basically the merchandise, as much of it as they can let go, it all goes on sale on Sunday evening. So had I known this, I may have waited because then I could have picked up, I think, I don't know, two or three of those wonderful printed booklets for the price that I paid on Saturday morning for one of them. But, you know, it is what it is. Bottom line, it is something that is available. And as I said, it makes for a wonderful souvenir.
That's amazing. I wish I would have stayed longer Sunday now, but I couldn't fit it in my luggage. So I guess we should quickly talk about we're getting to time. So quickly talk about travel, right? Because we, like you were a little more last minute than I was, right? So, you know.
Yeah. I literally got talked into it by you, along with several others, our mutual friends from Star Trek Las Vegas, along with, again, I mentioned those folks that I've known for years online that found out that I was possibly maybe going and who started messaging me saying, "We're coming. Why don't you come along as well?" So yeah, that was an additional, and you know what? It wonderfully fell into place, even though it was very last moment. Now, we already talked about it in the beginning that we had very different ways of getting to Birmingham because you already were there. You were doing your Liverpool trip and everything. Now, I flew overnight via Dublin. So I basically had the direct route, so to speak. So it was Dublin, layover in Dublin, and then I flew in straight into Birmingham, which makes it actually very convenient because once you land in Birmingham, in the international airport, there is a monorail that runs to the Birmingham International, which is a very large train station. So if you are actually flying elsewhere, namely, say, London, you can actually take a train from London to Birmingham International. Once you're there, you literally just walk straight into NSE. So the whole thing is extremely close together. It took, you know, we're talking, it's a matter of minutes. You know, once you're out, you know, through passport control, boom, you're done. So something, though, to consider, while I was in Dublin, I kind of noticed that there were a lot of stairs. You know, I suppose sounds like, oh, of course, you know, everywhere there's stairs. But people traveling, especially if you have any kind of mobility issue, that actually could become a problem. The local, I want to say local train, my apologies, the regional flight, the one going from Dublin to Birmingham, is actually a very small plane. So there is no, you know, that J bridge that connects from the terminal to the plane. You actually have to walk out onto the field, on the tarmac, walk over and board via stairs. So I was actually sitting wondering, well, what would they do if somebody showed up who, you know, unfortunately had their leg broken or something else? Just so happens there was a lady sitting next to me who was flying a completely different place. I think she was going to Manchester. And she had a broken hip. And I started talking to her, and she said, yes, they do have ADA services at the airport. She let the people at the gate know. So I think there's something like a van that comes along that she could board, and they would take her directly from the gate to the airplane. And there was some sort of special lift or platform that would actually lift her up into the plane, because obviously she wasn't able to board via regular boarding stairs. So it's something that I mentioned before, it helps to plan ahead. So if you are in that condition where you do have an issue, you know, walking up and down the stairs, kind of look ahead of, you know, what are you flying through? How are you flying through? Is there any kind of special services that would need to be contacted in order to be able to travel? That was sort of like one of those unusual things that suddenly, you know, you start to realize, oh, this is very different than domestic flights in U.S.
I did.
Because we're used to just walking out of the terminal through the J bridge right into the plane. And that only happened with, you know, once I boarded my transatlantic flight back in Dublin. That was your regular, you know, yeah, walk in, giant plane, everybody landed, you know, everybody boarded without any issues.
And I guess in Dublin, don't you, if you're flying out of Dublin, don't you do customs in Dublin so you can just...
Going back, yes, that was very helpful. It's actually, I've had experience with that before flying back from Montreal Comic Con. Certain international airports have U.S. pre-clearance areas. So basically, it feels like it's an indeterminate number of checkpoints. But bottom line is it's the customs and the passport control leaving the country. So leaving, in this case, it was Ireland. And then there's the U.S. pre-clearance area, which is basically the passport control that you would normally have when you would arrive back to the States. In this case, I already passed it. So once I landed, I simply walk out of the gate and, you know, took the car back home. Yeah. That was it. There was nothing else I had to do in New York.
So what I did was I flew from Oklahoma City to Heathrow. And then from Heathrow, I took a train to Liverpool, which was about a two-hour trip. Stayed there with friends, Star Trek friends, of course. And then from Liverpool, I took the train back to London and then hung out with Scott and friends there. And then he drove us to Birmingham, which was another 2 hours. So I got to experience a lot of the transportation, if you will, buses, underground, everything I got to experience, which was fun. I would say, like, if you plan on making this trip to Destination Star Trek, just start working out before you go, because, like, you'll get told that's only over there and it could be a mile or two. And if you're not used to walking like I wasn't, it was quite a feat to get myself to where, honestly, now I walk during my day just because I got so used to it. I hit my goals every day now ever since I was there. But I did go from going like one to two flights a day here in Oklahoma City to in Liverpool going up as many as 22 flights a day because there's stairs everywhere and everywhere there's a lot of walking. So just be prepared for that. Bring your comfortable shoes. At least I did bring my one pair of comfortable shoes. So that was something good that I had, so that I didn't have any issues when I got back home. But you'll have to work out a little bit to really enjoy it. And I would say, you know, like, now I know why, you know, we're so healthy in Europe, because we walk everywhere. So now I can keep up, I believe. So,
yeah. Another note about the travel, and it does apply to if you do decide to fly the way I did via, you know, going transatlantic somewhere in Europe and then a regional flight. And that's actually the reason why I only ended up buying a very limited number of any kind of, you know, souvenirs or collectibles at the convention itself. Regional flights tend to involve smaller planes with limited space. And so in those cases, be ready to meet very stringent baggage policies, especially if you're only traveling with carry-on, such as I do. So, you know, in this particular case, just to give you an idea, I flew Aer Lingus via Dublin. And that was actually, I looked it up ahead of time, as I do. They said, if you have that layover and you are employing later on a regional flight elsewhere, you know, within Ireland, within UK, with, you know, going further into Europe, whatever, I had a limit. I could only have one bag with me, not like we normally have, you know, have one carry-on bag and a personal item. No, just one bag. And it had to be 7 kilos or less. So basically, I had to fit everything that I needed for 3 days, plus, you know, possibly considering that I will have something else bought at the convention. And all of that had to fit into this one bag. I cannot remember the dimensions on top of my head, but basically the size of backpack, under 15 pounds. It sounds like, oh my goodness, it is doable. I just did that very successfully. But it's just something to be aware of. And again, plan ahead.
Yeah, I was able to have just one check bag, and a small check bag. And I had that, and that lasted me all of 2 weeks, because, you know, I spent the first week there and then ended up Destination Star Trek. And thankfully, a couple of friends that I stayed with had washing machines, so that was good. And it was just really neat to experience the convention through as a tourist, right? And experience a new culture a way I haven't before. So it was really cool. So, Marina, I think
we covered pretty much most of the experience. I mean, the only thing I can think of, we did mention that there are certain things that we did decided not to do, both of us, such as the parties, and there were certain other events like those green screen photo shoots that they had with the captain's chairs and everything. There was one thing that we didn't mention, even though we kind of talked about it in the previous episode. They had the costume exhibits. There were two of them. There was a prop and costume museum, and then there was the Discovery exhibit. The Discovery exhibit was pretty much what we saw in Vegas, even though it felt smaller. So I don't think they actually brought every single prop and costume, but they did have all the mirror costumes of, you know, Emperor Georgiou and the Mirror Berman and Mirror Kelly. Those were the ones I kind of poked my head, and I realized that this is exactly what I already saw in Vegas. So I decided to basically back out and do something else. The prop and costume museum was wonderful. Unfortunately, they reasons unknown to me, there were limitations. They said, please, no photos. We discussed it again in the previous episode. I thought it was Martin Natter's collection, but it was actually somebody else. It was a different Jason Joyner, I think is his name, a different collector. He had coverage across pretty much every single series and most of the movies. So that was pretty much amazing. They had, there was the model of Nomad. There was Captain Kirk's costume from the motion picture. They had Janeway's Borg armor from Unimatrix Zero, you know, Dr. Crush's costume from Insurrections, all across, you had this wonderful, wonderful selection. I wish I'd taken photos because that's always a lot of fun to see the real thing. So that was a very pleasant experience. Otherwise, I think, as we mentioned, I think we covered pretty much everything that we've done. So we probably should wrap it up and be done with it. So, Jesse, parting words, what do you think?
Parting words, I will tell you that I was told it'd be a smaller convention and not to expect Vegas, so I didn't go expecting Vegas. I was a little... I haven't been overwhelmed by a crowd in a long time, so the crowd was a bit overwhelming when I first got there. But once I got into the groove, knew where everything was, started meeting some people that I had already known, it was about the people, and I got to meet a lot of good people. I got to see things that I wouldn't have seen before because this was Birmingham and it wasn't, Vegas. And so I'm really happy I went. And, circumstances allowing, I will go again. I'm not sure next year, but I'll definitely go again. I had such a good time. And it's definitely on my list of repeats.
So what are your final thoughts on the convention?
Something that kind of, goes back to what I already mentioned. Had the circumstances been different, if I didn't have experience with very similar type of conventions, maybe I would have been more intimidated. As such, I wasn't. There were certain ways, certain things that I did expect this convention to be, certain way that I expected things to play out, and they did. So I was very, very comfortable. I enjoyed myself tremendously. So if an opportunity comes along, I will certainly, do this convention again. It's on my list of conventions to track now. So we'll see. As we know, the next convention will happen next year, which is somewhat unusual because they have been doing it every 2 years, both in UK and in Germany. We already know the dates. It's October 25th through October 27th. They even already announced the first guest, George C.K.
Yep.
So we shall see.
We shall see. So... that's about it. We're going to wrap this puppy up. So Marina, where can people find you on social media?
You can find me on Facebook. My full name, Marina Kravchuk. If you do decide to contact me, don't just send a friend invite because unless we actually have met somewhere, I'm probably not going to accept it. Do shoot me a message if you'd like. And I do try to respond. I check that other message box with other, other messages from people who I'm not friends with on Facebook. You can also find me on Twitter and on Instagram. My handle is at Drakkorex, Drakkorex. And where can people find you, Jesse?
Me, you can find me on Facebook as well with my name, Jesse Okendo. I'm also on Twitter at Outrageous Okendo. That's OutRageousOkendo. And you can reach both of us via our page, which is tricordertransmissions.com/shoreleave. And with that, I think we are done. So again, thanks for listening to us talk about Destination Star Trek. We look forward to coming back and bring you some more convention information. And until then, live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper. Keep on trekking.